Does that mean it was hairy before you started?
And hello.
Hi, everybody.
Welcome.
You are listening to 101.9 LP Vashon, Washington. And you're listening to The Clatch.
Hi.
Hey.
I'm Linda Nygaard.
Heidi Skripek.
Heidi Skripek is here with me in the studio. We're missing one of our chief contributors today.
Where the heck did she go?
I don't know. Susan just ran away, I think. But
we scared her.
And we scared her off. So Heidi and I are going to man the mics today.
We're going to wo-man.
We're wo-manning the mics.
We got you.
That's what we're doing. So,
yeah.
Welcome. I'm glad you're here. Do you know that today we have so much to talk about today? We're going to talk about abortion and politics and South America and
supermodels and
supermodels
wine.
And wine. Everything,
and
everything you want to know.
Signaling.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That.
We got so much
we
going
got,
on.
So, okay, let's go.
What day is it?
It is 2/22/22.
Ah.
Think about that.
Ew.
I got really curious about it this morning. I looked, oh my gosh, it's a palindrome for one thing.
Heck yeah.
And another thing, so I looked up numerology.
Ew.
And I wanted to see, I don't know much about numerology, and I will say, you know, like we say, we've had our charts done. Mm. I've never had my numbers done.
Mm,
but
me neither.
I think it would be kind of fun. I don't know how they do it, but anyway.
Are you going to drop a deuce?
Heidi.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
The number two.
Two. It's a magic number.
So numerology. In numerology, what I learned this morning is that the number two is known as through with numerologists as a supremely feminine force, one that represents both grace and power. It's cooperative. Mm-hmm. It's always aiming to bring peace and balance.
Yes.
So, you know, two. It's a wonderful number. And the two is the number that represents the strongest intuition.
Ooh.
So the number two also is able to feel currents and feelings instinctively. And then people who have that number tend to want to keep networks going and partnerships blooming.
We need a numerologist on the show.
I think so too. I'd like to do that. That's... Is there a numerologist out there?
Hello.
Anybody? Come along.
info@theclatch.org.
They also refer to it as an angel number, which according to numerologists can represent a choice between outcomes. You get to choose your outcome if you have a number two.
Ooh. Like a fork in the road.
Yeah, like a fork in the road. There's different decisions to be made around that. But, you know, I was just really taken by the idea of partnership and cooperation. And I thought, okay, so speaking of partnership, let's just go out of here today with an idea about creating partnerships and networks and moving forward through community, which we do pretty well anyway.
Definitely so.
But speaking of partnerships.
Yeah.
Today's our 1 year anniversary.
It's not just 2/22/22. 2/22/22.
Yeah. The Clatch has been on the air now for a whole year.
Yay.
And when we discovered that, we were all surprised.
It's so awesome.
Because it went really fast.
What did we talk about?
I don't know what we talked about. I was trying to figure that out. But I know we had a lot of really good guests. We had, remember when Arlette Moody came on? Oh, you were gone. That's why we had her.
Yeah.
She was just wonderful.
She's great.
She talked about girl parts in in Pilates, you know, and there were names of little organs and little things in women's parts.
I took a class from her at VAC, a Pilates class, and she had us imagining from our navel to our cooter that we were moving a raisin.
Yeah, she said like, that too. Yeah, moving the raisin. You're moving the raisin. We got a lot of comments on that. It was really fun. And Kate O'Kane came and told us all about England. And
she's great.
She's just fabulous. Mm-hmm. And then we had Cindy Hoyt. You were gone that day too.
Yeah.
And her book, Tansmania.
She's one of my favorite kind of hidden comedians on the island. Mm-hmm. Great.
Funny girl.
Oh, the best.
Funny girl. Yeah.
Cool.
And then CeCe Stone came on. We talked about travel, a lot about travel. She told us a lot about Amsterdam and how Amsterdam is organized and such a wonderful place to be.
I want to go.
Yeah.
Check that out.
I know.
Remember Kate O'Kane did a good job of describing her trip to England. You're right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good. Oh, and Susan Powell.
And Susan told us all about how she lived off the grid for 1,000 years in Humboldt County.
She just made it work.
Oh, it just kills me. I just love kills that. Me. And, you know, some of our topics were domestic violence.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
Not that that's funny. I didn't mean to laugh at that. I was laughing at the second word I was going to say, which is boobs.
Boobs.
We had a whole show about boobs.
Well, it's boobalicious.
Boobalicious. We did a lot about travel. And
mm-hmm.
So we're heading into our second year now.
And yay.
I don't know if we're going to change, if we're going to stay the same, but we're moving forward in partnership.
Everything must change.
Yeah. We should probably talk a little bit about how we started this.
We should.
It was just an idea after I had coffee with somebody during COVID when we were all alone. Nobody was touching. Nobody was talking. It was just total isolation.
Yeah.
And I would have sometimes Zoom coffee with a girlfriend or two.
Yes.
And one time I did it and I got off the Zoom and I thought, God, that was just almost as good as having coffee, really. And I wondered if other people ever did that. So then I talked to Heidi and I talked to Susan, and together we decided we'd like to do a show about that. So it's a COVID prompted show, not about COVID really, but COVID really encouraged us to move forward and try and contact other people who might feel lonesome. And we just talk about the things we want to talk about. There really isn't much agenda. We like to say it like it is. And, you know, that's one thing Arlette Moody does very well.
She's great that way.
Yeah, she really is.
That's so mince words.
So how are we in the COVID situation? What's going on with you?
I did not catch COVID this
Excellent.
Entire run, which is...
Me neither.
And boy... Had a lot of friends who have.
I know.
And
even careful friends.
Oh, yeah.
Vaccinated careful friends.
Yeah. All the way vaxxed, boosted, and they caught it. And there's currently some new variant of Omicron.
Yeah, I read that.
That's hyper contagious. What's new?
Is it here?
It is. It's in the U.S.
Is it?
I don't know if it's in this particular zone. But King County, in like a week and one day, they're going to lift the indoor vax.
Oh, I know.
So
you don't have to be vaccinated to eat indoors.
I'm still going to mask up when
too.
I travel. Where are you at with that?
With masking?
Yeah.
Oh, I intend to wear my mask most of the time.
Good.
Grocery store. Good. Yeah, I just as a caution, and maybe by summer it'll feel different.
I haven't gotten sick for this whole time.
Knock on wood.
I'm knocking on whatever this is. For my
there's wood underneath
wood.
It.
Press board.
Yeah.
Because it has been amazing. And I am a believer because I'm still here. I haven't even had a cold. I haven't had strep. I haven't had anything that I know get hammered with usually every year.
Yeah.
Once or twice or three times a year.
Yeah.
Hallelujah.
Well, and you know, whoever they are saying that we're not getting colds and flu like we used to because we're washing our hands.
Yeah.
And we're wearing masks.
It's so easy.
So why not?
Yeah.
I don't want the flu, even if it's not COVID. I don't care. I don't want it. So.
Airlines FAA is basically indicating that those masking rules will probably stick around for flights.
Mm.
And I think it's fantastic.
I think it's wonderful. I was listening to Tom Hartman this morning. They were talking about the violence on flights.
Mm-hmm.
And the person who called in was wondering, why don't the airlines get together and make a policy? If you are arrested and accost one of our flight attendants, you're on a no-fly list, period, nationally, all airlines.
Yeah, it's
because
not like...
now what they do is, you know, they get rude on Delta and they go to United.
They bounce them to another one.
Yeah,
so great.
So there's some movement out there talking about that, I guess.
Yeah.
Because time. Congress isn't going to do anything about it.
Isn't that always the case, though, Linda? Mm-hmm. It becomes the job of private enterprise to form, shape, guinea pig policy.
Mm-hmm.
Let's try it on.
Let's do it. Let's see what happens.
Yeah. So I'm all in. We're getting through this and it's getting better. And yay that COVID brought us together to talk a couple times a month and do this on the air. It's awesome.
Well, and a shout out to other producers in the studio and to Kate Dowling, who has kept this studio pristine.
It's
we
so
have
clean.
Little filters that go over our microphones. We have to change them every time we use them.
Yep.
We wipe down the counters with antiseptic, and it's really safe. And
it is.
I feel good being here. I'm thankful to be here, actually. It's nice.
Thank you, Kate. Thank you, volunteers.
Yes. Thank you.
Yay.
We were going to one thing we talked about, if we were going to change our show at all, and we decided that one thing we don't do enough is rant.
Or do we?
Or maybe we do. Maybe that's all we do is rant.
Bunch of whiny beep beep.
I know. But I think it'd be fun to have a rant. You know, Heidi can have a rant.
I would like to say, no, thank you. I'm going to counter my rant with a rave.
Okay.
This first one. I would like to say no, thank you to the dozens of people in the 17 going on 18. As of this month, 18 years that I've lived in my home on the North End.
Mm-hmm.
Each year, my mailbox is smashed to smithereens when we have a snowstorm. When we have a snowstorm.
Oh, when we have a snow. Yeah.
Yeah. People come over 103rd Hill to the North End like it's any other day. And then sure enough, they get to the steepest descent of the hill, which also slopes slightly to the east. That is my driveway. And there's a culvert on either side of the driveway mm-hmm. underneath. Mm-hmm. So there's an embankment. Well, of course, they smash into the mailbox most of the time or our rockery. So rant to the people, especially last year.
Well, this year.
And this year, too, was really bad.
Yeah.
And then this year, rave to the person who actually came clean after I went on Bachelor Nights and posted to the person who smashed into our rock wall. You mm-hmm. know, it would be nice. You're missing part of your car. If you'd like your piece back, contact me. Yeah. They didn't, but a relative did. And then eventually the people that hit my wall and ran, mm-hmm. and maybe they just had a bad moment.
They were scared.
Their car was wrecked and they were thinking of themselves.
Yeah.
I'm really glad you're okay. Thank you for calling your insurance company, having them contact me, mm-hmm. offer to fix the wall. I have declined only because it would entail ripping apart the whole wall and bringing the whole excavator and all that. I'd rather just have it kind of wonky and just swallow
it's still it. There.
Yeah, it's still damaged, but I mean, it's just like, really, do I want to take away the whole berm wall and mm-hmm. put it all back together? No.
No.
So we're going to let it ride, but rave to that person for coming clean and rant to all the rest of you not nice people who damage people's property and then you just keep going or you only care about your own car.
I know.
You guys.
It happens in Thriftway parking lot a lot.
I know.
I've gotten my car scratched and dented and all kinds of things. And I did at one time. It was so bad I asked if they had their video camera on. And they did.
Yeah.
And we saw the guy.
Oh, good.
But we couldn't read the license plate. And it wasn't a local car, you know. So, but people just do that or wang their door into your door and don't even.
It's just not cool.
Yeah.
It's going to become the surveillance era. I mean, we do have the Ring cameras up. Mm-hmm. And when that happened this year, we repositioned one of the Ring cameras. Mm. So next time it snows next year.
You'll know.
We're going to position that camera and it's happening.
That's good.
We're so on
That's
it.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
So, yeah.
That's an interesting rant, Heidi.
It's just don't hit and run. I guess that's the theme of it.
Well, whether it's a car hit and run or a
human,
a human, or you tip over something or, you know, there's just a lot of inconsiderate stuff going on.
I guess that maybe isn't the technical hit and run then. Hit and run probably involves a human.
That's
no,
a
it doesn't.
Person. Well, I don't know.
No. Because if you hit a car, you do damage.
You hit and run. Okay.
Hit and run efficient. We need you.
Anything else you want to rant about, Heidi?
I
oh, I shouldn't have asked.
And another thing. I'm not too crazy about the sandwich board signs all around town, although I'm not the person who would go and steal them.
No, I know you wouldn't.
I know for a fact it's not me.
I know for a fact it's not you, too.
We know who you are. We don't.
But we're not going to get you.
Yeah, you're lucky.
Just stop it.
I saw you at Thriftway and I wanted to say something. There is an actual person behind those thefts from last year. It's not going to happen anymore.
No,
there's
it won't.
Too much at stake.
Yeah.
Those sandwich board signs, guys, when you're operating your business and when you have active hours, put the signs out. When you're not, pull them in. And when you do place them, for the love of God, make sure people who are physically challenged can get past it. It's so rude.
It's really rude.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Thank
okay,
you.
I'm with you on that.
Rant over.
Thank you for that. I think we'll make Susan rant next time.
Yes, please. Let's do.
Because she's absent, so we can just give her all assignments we want to.
And another rant. DJ hosts who don't show up. Just kidding.
Just kidding. JK,
you.
JK.
We love you.
Miss you, Susan.
We understand.
Well, let's moving right along.
Yes.
to tidbits, our little, what we've learned in the news.
Give me a tidbit.
Are you a Charles Dickens fan?
I wish I was. I
wish
I
were
too. I
don't know
that much about Charles Dickens.
No. I mean, I can quote a couple things and, you know, but I really don't. Well, you know, there are Dickensian scholars all over the world who just devour every word.
And, I'm dumb.
and they have recognized patterns in his writing and they can pick out his writing from other writings.
That's
and it's
a gift.
It's really big. But there is a letter that Charles Dickens wrote to his editor, you know, before, and nobody could understand it because he wrote it in his own personal shorthand.
Ah.
Now, here's a little tidbit for you. Mm. Charles Dickens was a court reporter before he was an author. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. And I suppose, you know, Dickensian scholars will know that, but I didn't. And I thought it was quite a wonderful thing to learn because he took the shorthand that he learned in his training and turned it into his own shorthand. So nobody can decipher it.
It's sort of a genius way to protect your work.
To protect, well, and this was a letter he apparently didn't want a lot of people to read or know that he wanted to write.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So I'm wondering if this was like an outline of what he wanted to write to the editor, because the editor certainly couldn't have read this. And if you see the photograph of the letter, it's just the weirdest. It's curly Q's and dashes and squares and a circle around an A. And
I love that.
Somebody saw, like our at, the A with the circle around it.
Yeah.
They thought, they saw it in there and they thought, well, that means at.
Oh.
And it meant all around.
Oh, that's so cute.
All around.
I totally get it.
Yeah, I got it too. I loved it. So anyway, this letter sat for decades and decades and decades in New York at the Morgan Library and Museum. And many people have tried to decipher it. And they can't.
Still.
Well, it's deciphered pretty much now.
Oh, good.
And what they had was a combination of Dickens experts who were well-read, maybe professorial, I don't know, but mm-hmm. experts. Mm-hmm. And there were also computer geeky guys and women who wanted to use their computers and their computer knowledge, their programming knowledge, to decipher this. And the winner of the competition who deciphered most of it is Shane Baggs, who is a computer technical support specialist in San Jose. Wow. Had never read a Dickens novel.
Oh, wow.
And he transcribed more symbols than any of the 1,000 people who entered the contest.
It just shows you he's symbolic, logically gifted.
Yeah, and he said, I got C's in literature, you know. So anyway, the content of the letter is he's mad at his editor. And they can tell what he's talking about in there because, you know, some of the words that he uses are really obvious to Dickens scholars, and they might not be to regular people. Like, Dickens fans recognized HW. He just said HW. And that is household words.
Oh.
It was just really interesting, and I didn't know.
That's so great.
That he had done that. And, you know, the transcription sheds some light on a dispute he had with the Times of London. And he says that a clerk at the newspaper was wrong to reject an advertisement he had wanted in the paper. Mm-hmm. And he's promoting a new literary publication. And you guys better sit up and pay attention.
Wow.
And
that's so cool.
Yeah.
It was his revenge letter, kind of.
Kind of. And it used to be one of the enduring mysteries. And it's no longer. There's still a few little symbols in there they can't quite decipher, but but they've done it. And I just thought that was really interesting. And I had to tell you about
it.
Yeah, I did too.
Did you ever take symbolic logic?
No.
Oh, it's such a great class. It's hard. It's math. It's basically math with words and phrasing and stuff. There are all these theorems. It's hard to explain, but there are actual texts of theorems that have all these published arguments and syntax and ways to do tongue foo. It's really cool.
I love that.
It's really cool. It messes with your head when everything else is a different style of learning, and then you go and do this class. But it's
say it again. What's it called?
Symbolic logic. It's under the philosophy courses.
Oh, I would love that.
Yeah.
I would really love that. I think
you would totally love it.
I should have. I could. Maybe there's an online course.
I bet you there is. I think there's an online course for just about everything.
Just about everything, yeah.
I love that tidbit.
Well, I just had one more tidbit that I wanted to talk about, and it is abortion. You know, Colombia just legalized abortion in South America, and I just, I can't.
Yay! Oh, sorry.
Ding, ding, ding.
I'm ringing a bell.
That they did it, you know. They always have had the law. Well, not probably not always, but their law has been that you could get an abortion if there were incest, rape, if the baby was sick, and if the mother's life was endangered. So
still more liberal than a lot
still
of places
more
in the U.S.
than Texas.
Oh, definitely.
You know, and now they can have abortions because they want to have an abortion because they can't. They don't want to have the child. So it's all legal, and they're celebrating. The women in Colombia now are dancing in the streets. This just happened yesterday.
There were some jubilant photos that I saw in the news headlines.
I know.
Great.
I think that's really interesting, and I also think it's most interesting that these countries are passing up the U.S. pretty quickly.
It's so sad. We're watching the world right now on so many levels. War.
War. Yeah. War.
Investing, the economy. Shipping and
speaking
logistics.
Of the economy, I read in the Seattle Times this morning that over this last year, real estate prices in Seattle raised 23.7%, with 5% of that in December.
Holy mackerel.
Hang on to your house because you can't afford a new one.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No. Gosh.
And I guess that means that contractors are sitting on gold mines too with their
they
skills.
Are. Yep, with their skills.
Maybe go
crazy
to trade
skills.
School, kids. Yeah. Consider plumbing.
Or nursing.
Yeah.
Nursing, there's a big need for nurses. Yeah.
Awesome.
One of the things that we wanted to talk about was women.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. We always like to talk about women.
Mm-hmm.
We like to talk about men too.
Yeah.
Heidi, you have some stuff on Allure magazine and some...
Oh, that. Yes.
Oh, did you want to... Is there something else?
There's women and wine, too.
Oh, yeah. We want to talk about both of it. Which do you want to talk about first?
Let's start with Quanah Rose Chasing Horse Potts. Hyphenated name.
Who is that?
She was born in 2002. She will be turning...
Oh,
she's
my
only
goodness.
19 right mm-hmm. now. She's an American model. And a land protector. She's a Native American.
Mm-hmm.
She's a role model. She's beauty. So she's a literal model and a role model, fashion model.
Mm-hmm. Where's she from?
So her early life, she was born in Tuba City, Arizona.
Tuba City. Okay.
But she is actually an Alaskan Native American. I can't say it very well, but it's Han Gwichin of Eagle Village, Alaska on her mom's side. And Lakota in South Dakota, mm-hmm. her dad's side. She grew up mostly in Alaska, spent her early years in Arizona. And also, her grandparents are Mongolian.
Wow.
So she spent time there, too.
Yeah.
It's really amazing.
Wow.
But she is absolutely stunning. She has lower face tattoos. As you come of age in her tribe, you get one, firstly, you get one vertical line just underneath your bottom lip. Goes all the way down your chin.
Like in your chin cleft. Kinda.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then a couple years later, you get one on either side. So she's got all three now.
Mm.
And, you know, she will be 20 very soon. She appeared in the 2020 Teen Vogue list of top 21 under 21. Don't you just know those lists?
Yeah.
She's absolutely stunning. She walked for Gucci. She landed a gig with Calvin Klein for their future CK1 youth campaign. She's registered with IMG Models. She's gone all over the world. And most recently, in this current issue coming up here for March, in Allure magazine, she has a center spread with her mother and her aunties, all pictured with their face tattoos and as they are in Alaska, some beautiful winterscapes.
Is that where she lives now?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And the big giant coats with the big fuzzy fur trim and just all of it. It's all depicted. And representation is so important right now that she gets to lead that charge and unapologetically be who she is.
I'm so glad.
Oh, it's so
that
cool.
just really warms my heart.
Yeah.
Is this out yet?
Yeah, it's shipping right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I want to read that article. That'll be really good.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
No.
It's mostly pictorial, but yeah, there's a little tribute about how the women are the, they're kind of the doers and the fierce ones. Mm-hmm. And she didn't really have a dad growing up. She was raised by a whole bunch of really powerful ladies. Which
aunties.
Is really cool. Yep.
You know, the aunties.
It's the thing.
Yeah.
So she's doing a whole lot right now. She makes a point of celebrating Indigenous fashion and promoting sustainable Indigenous brands. So she's being a mouthpiece for her people, but also just being present in highly visible circles where normally you wouldn't see Indigenous culture. Mm-hmm. So she's doing it.
Well, bravo, Allure.
Yeah. Yay, Allure.
Bravo.
Yeah.
Bravo. Yeah. Yeah. Well, on that note, you know, the Black History Month, I haven't forgotten about the other part, but
No.
This hinges right onto that in that there's a former oyster farmer and athlete named Imani Black, who founded Minorities in Aquaculture in order to champion women and diversity in the aquaculture sector.
That's awesome.
And she is in Chesapeake Bay, and she is hiring Black women. There are so many Black women in aquaculture, the oyster farmers and the shrimp trawlers. And
amazing.
So this whole article is in
The fish site.
Which I don't know how I came across it. I don't know where it came from, but it's a most interesting article. So if you want to read about these women in aquaculture, which is interesting for us too, because we have women in aquaculture in the United States.
Yes.
Right. I mean, right around here.
Oh, absolutely. Fish pens right there off Bainbridge.
Off Bainbridge Island. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, it is just called The Fish Site, SITE.com. And you can read about Imani in there. She is she's currently working as faculty research assistant at the University of Maryland for environmental science. And she has started this business about women in aquaculture.
Aquaculture. Do you suppose she used her own business as a case study for, you know, some of her graduate work?
I think so, because she talks about her hands-on experience that she gained when she was an intern for college, you know, so she learned how to do what it is that they do and realized through that, wow, there's women doing this.
It's the best story when you have intern to hire type situations like that, or intern to start your own and find a niche and fill it. That's so cool. That's amazing.
She also said that she doesn't see many persons of color in the industry.
In aquaculture? No.
Yeah, no, you just don't. And she said this was a grim reality for her at first, because, you know, she is, so why isn't somebody else? But
now she's bringing in other people of color.
Yes, she is. Minorities in aquaculture.
That's a big deal.
It's a really big deal. And the article goes on to, it's a really long article. It talks about what her typical day is. What's her current role? How does she do that? What did she learn? Why is this important? And she says women are becoming increasingly present in the aquaculture industry, but it's still seen as male-dominated field.
And dirty work and stinky
work. It is dirty, stinky work. Yeah. But she said she's had amazing women that have supported and empowered her along her way and showed her examples of how to pay it forward. And that's what she's trying to do now.
She's being the mentor.
She's being the mentor. She was menteed.
Yes.
At one point.
She's mented.
Mented.
<I'm just kidding.
laughs> Demented. Yeah.
I love that.
And she talks a little bit about how there are gender-related challenges. Women are perceived in this industry as having to be looked after. You have to, you know, sort of protect the woman. Go check on the ladies. But she said the worst thing that happened to her was her boss, when she was in doing oysters, her boss was a man, and he felt like she was working too hard. So he assigned her to more manageable tasks and lighter duties.
Oh.
And she didn't like that.
No.
So, yeah, it's a really good story.
It's a little patronizing.
Isn't it?
I especially love that she's making an effort to bring other women of color. It's not just like, screw you, I got mine. You know, it's like, and now I've got my foot in the door. Let me kick that thing down and let you come in too. Which is
And
really
she
cool.
also encourages women of not color, women.
Just women.
But mostly women of color, yes. But, you know, Caucasian women are welcome too.
I love that.
I do too. I love it very much.
Speaking of, can I go tangential on you? This is not a total tangent. This is totally related. Only
we love tangents.
There's a guy, a man of color, whose name is Rocky Flowers, and he's right here in this region. He works at Team Diva. It's one of the chapters of Coldwell Banker Bain Real Estate.
Okay.
And Rocky is a great example of a person of color who is extending, lifting other people of color up into both owning real estate and working in real estate. And some of
is this Seattle?
This is, yeah.
Okay.
This is, I think, Capitol Hill area. No, it's a great question. And it's not on the island. I wish it was. Mm-hmm. But there are some things that Rocky's doing that we can all take away in the businesses that we run and the places where we work. And it just got me thinking about it because there's some little checklist items. I helped edit a piece. And I just started to really emotionally invest in it. As I read it, I was like, oh, man, there's some gems in here that make you really question yourself. So the first thing that Rocky advises is, as a real estate business, and particularly with the lens of real estate brokerage, do not virtue signal. You must engage. And virtue signaling is essentially where you act publicly. You express an opinion or a sentiment intended to show your good character or moral correctness on a particular issue, in this case, inclusion of people of color.
Mm-hmm.
And that's virtue signaling. So if I did a Coldwell Banker ad, or if I did any ad and it was like, here's my black friend, you know, look how awesome I am. But then in reality, you're not engaging with any people of color in your day-to-day business.
Mm-hmm.
Your clientele is not at all people of color, and your employees look like you, white or whatever, then you're virtue signaling in your marketing. And to really do better, you have to go where there are people of color
and learn,
ask questions, recruit. And Seattle, like many other American cities, has a history of racist segregation is kind of the best way I can put it in the language of each deed, property deed. There were whole entire neighborhoods meant to exclude.
Oh, yeah.
That language still lives on a lot of these deeds. Mm-hmm. As they change hands, the language has never really been amended. And so even though you would never exclude in this day and age, you could by what's written on those deeds. It's really horrible.
Wow.
So just that's you can go down a path of bureaucracy and get that stuff scrubbed, by the way. But outreach is lacking, is his point when he wrote this. Minority communities have an opportunity to gain generational wealth. And how that happens is there are actually monies out there and special funds and benefactors that exist that can help you with your down payment on your home. And agents can have the keys to the castle. There's Homestead Community Land Trust. And there's another one called HomeSite, HomeSite. These have down payment assistance programs for qualified buyers.
Wow.
You know, owning a home is the first step to generational wealth.
Right.
We were just talking about before we started the show, there's a gentleman who got a property really young. He's not a person of color. He got lucky, but he started young.
In Seattle.
Yeah. And he's set now.
Yeah.
He's set. Yeah. And there's other people. Jim Nelson on the north end.
Mm-hmm.
He set his grandson up, showing him how to invest in real estate and build, and he's got trade skills, and you're set. So lifting people of color up in the same way, teaching them, giving them the tools that they need, and lifting them up, it's so important. So walk the talk. I'm ranting now. There's my rant.
Well,
that's a
good rant. Yeah. Maybe we do rant on this show.
But brokers and realtors have a profound impact, and they can, on the Black community and helping its members achieve that American dream with their first home. Once you have that.
Oh, that's exciting.
You know?
That's very exciting.
So yay to Rocky Flowers. Yay to the people in this region that are actually walking their talk.
So if you said this, I missed it. Does he have an organization or how do I engage with him if I want to use some of his services?
Oh, Google Rocky Flowers and Google CBB, that's Coldwell Banker Bain
Okay.
CBB Team Diva.
Oh, I love that.
Rocky's on Team Diva with two other ladies.
Okay.
That are the owner partners. Uh-huh. And so Rocky Flowers, Team Diva.
Okay.
And you'll find Rocky.
Get yourself a house.
Yes.
Yeah.
And get more Rocky in your life. Because he sounds like a dynamic
human being. He sounds
like
pretty wonderful. Yeah.
We love it. You know what we haven't done?
Mm.
We haven't given props to our fabulous underwriters, and we do need to do that.
Thank you for remembering that.
Yep, 100%.
About our underwriters, like Vashon Market IGA and Vashon Plaza, one block west of the main highway, where you can find everything your family needs, from fresh produce to kids specials, legendary meats, wine, spirits, and movies. Open daily from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m.
VOV programming support is provided by Island Escrow, Vashon's only independent escrow company providing comprehensive service for all types of real estate transactions since 1979. On the web at islandescrow.net.
And we're back. Thank you, underwriters.
Yes, thank you. We couldn't do it without you, that's for sure. Thank you, underwriters. Heidi, let's talk about wine.
I work in the wine industry.
Yes, you do.
I don't talk about it a whole lot, but it's one of the most competitive industries of all packaged goods.
Is it really? It would be, I guess.
Oh, yeah,
ridiculous.
Sure. And it's a global competition. Mm-hmm. You're not just competing with other Washington wineries here in Washington. You're competing with any producer that's able to import, create, mm-hmm. And supply and distribute wines. So, mm-hmm. and maybe even a few down the road. Who knows? There are two women in Chicago who have started a refreshing type of wine club for Eater. Their names are Peel and Cheslick. Those are their last names. It's Megan, Marie Cheslick, and Kyla Peel.
Kyla.
Yeah. And they have created Slick Wines. It's like Silk, four letters, but it's S-L-I-K, mm-hmm. Wines. And they have a very refreshing approach to their tasting remarks.
Yeah, tell us about that.
So let me just read you this opener. It's hilarious. Sommelier Marie Cheslick solemnly regards her pink glass of wine. She real pink, she says. Like nights at the strip club pink.
That's
she swirls
pink.
It gently, yeah, very pink, with a kind of effortless confidence worthy of a psalm who's been certified by the court of master sommeliers, lowers her nose and inhales, and she gets sour gummy worms, the pink and blue ones, of course, and she goes on and on. And you can make wine as pedantic and esoteric mm-hmm. as you want, or as friendly and drop trow as you want.
Yeah, fun.
And it's just a nice approach. The idea here is leveraging social media like TikTok and Instagram, the local Chicago wine community. They're actually going in and trying wines that are not necessarily that expensive, and obviously with an eye for curating wines for their wine club.
Mm-hmm.
But they're really chasing after the millennial and Gen Z market. And as a wine marketer and somebody who's worked in the industry for over 10 years now, as a communications director,
mm-hmm.
I will tell you that demographic is slutty when it comes to brands.
They don't have brand loyalty.
There is no brand loyalty. Not only brand loyalty, they're not even category loyal.
Like, oh, really?
They'll drink spirits as readily as they'll drink wine, as readily as they'll drink beer.
Oh.
And so to try to target them,
mm-hmm.
In marketing, there's a philosophy that it's not even a philosophy, it's a proven fact. It's much more effective and cost effective to go after people who've already tried your product than to go after people who don't know your product. It's mm-hmm. way more expensive to market to new customers.
To new people, yeah.
That's why once someone gets your email address, you get a bazillion.
I know.
I want to swear, but I can't. Mm-hmm. Emails.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have you. Mm-hmm. And once they have you, oh God, they do everything to hang on to you.
All you have is unsubscribe.
And that
and
is
that
shame.
Doesn't even work sometimes.
No, you're totally right. Yeah. It doesn't work sometimes. And then sometimes you don't want to be completely cut out. I think the perfect middle ground is signing up for an email marketing source or a wine club like this, and telling them how much, having those preferences embedded in mm-hmm. that initial sign up. Like, do you want to hear from me once a week? Mm-hmm. Do you want to hear from me once a month? Mm-hmm. Do you never want to hear from me? Or do you want to hear from me only when there's like some amazing,
some big news,
cheap special,
right,
or big,
yeah,
news?
Yeah.
Because right now we're fatigued. We're so fatigued.
You mean we as the general audience?
As a consumer. Yeah. I ain't no Gen Xer. I mean, no, I am a Gen Xer. I'm not a Gen Zer or a millennial. Mm-hmm. My children are, I guess, almost millennials. They're millennials. I'm old.
Not as old as I am.
I'm doing the math here. Like, wait.
Yeah, don't. Just don't. It'll depress you for the rest of the day.
But I am a wine drinker. And
I know
guess
you
what?
Are.
Gen X and boomers, they're the bread and butter of the wine industry. They're the ones spending the money. Mm-hmm. They're the ones that have always loved you all along. Do not forget them.
Well, you know, and the boomers have some money.
Yes.
Which is a difference. And, the
yes,
younger kids don't. And
they have their parents' money.
Yeah, well, it depends on where they live, I guess.
True.
But I also think it's really interesting that they're taking this creative approach to market to that specific audience. And what it tells me with their sort of flippant, cute idea about words they use and how they explain themselves is really tricky. It's really good for some demographic like they're going after. For me, I don't want strip club pink wine.
Yeah, that's a good point. Or sour gummy worms.
Right, right. But, younger people do.
They probably do. I will add, you might get a million whatever responses on your TikTok and your Instagram or a million followers. But does that actually add up to sales?
That's what I was going to say. Does that translate to dollars?
Yeah, it doesn't
activity?
Always. It doesn't. It's really interesting. There was a client I had, Chow Foods. I don't know if you remember like Endeline Joe's and the Five Spot.
Yeah.
So they hired me to promote this silly dessert during the days when people were spilling McDonald's coffee and then suing them, John Bonza. So Five Spot created this dessert called The Bulge, and they made you sign a waiver so that if you got fat eating it, you wouldn't sue them. And so they had me write the press release, and I had to send it off.
That's pretty cute.
It went worldwide.
Did it?
They were interviewed on BBC. Oh. They were interviewed on CBC. They were interviewed nationally. They were on, they talked about it on The View.
Wow.
It was just this really fun, silly thing. And did they really sell a lot of them?
Yeah, did they?
Mm-mm. But they got famous.
But they got name recognition.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you know as well as I do that any press is good press.
Is even, this is why we don't talk about T with Five Letter Man, Raging Cheeto Man.
No.
We don't.
No.
Because that's the thing. Like, if you recirculate this crap.
Right.
It's like, don't.
Don't even say it.
Exactly.
Just don't even say it.
So, Slick Wines, good for you for taking this fresh approach and targeting millennials and Gen Z. Mm-hmm. Will it sell more wine? Will it cultivate a market for younger wine drinkers, which the category is desperately grabbing for, they want so badly? I don't know.
I don't know either, but what I have to say is these two young women are kicking it.
I don't mean to, I like to get really forensic on the stuff because this is totally
I know, but when we look at these faces of these two women on there who are doing their thing and they're happy and it's an honest way to make a living and they're doing something just a little bit off to the left,
And they're hooked in with Eater and they're hooked in with the restaurant.
Eater is good.
And Chicago's restaurant scene is unrivaled.
I know.
Like in the country, if you guys have never been to Chicago, you need to go. You need to go
to eat and drink.
Yeah.
That's all you need to do.
Do a steakhouse experience. Do some comedy, Second City.
Second City's there, yeah.
Yeah. And just go enjoy. And maybe go find these girls at Slick Wines because they're doing it too.
I would if I were going to Chicago. Actually, I think we should make a note and follow up with them in a few months.
Okay.
And just see what's going on.
Just to describe them, Kyla Peel has this beautiful afro and she's very tall and thin and lovely.
Mm-hmm.
And then Marie Cheslick looks like a probably Chicago Polish girl with a pixie cut.
She's very cute. She's very
really
blonde.
Cute. Yeah.
And her little stripes. Their pose is darling.
Yeah, little jumpsuits.
I wish them all the success in the world.
Yeah, hats off, you guys.
Yeah.
You're welcome for the airtime.
So We talked at one time, I don't know if we were going to talk about it today or not, but we talked about media and marketing.
Sure.
And I wonder, do we want to launch into that? You know, I'm finding it hard to find news.
Oh.
You know?
Yes.
It's like, now the media's marketing war.
Sensationalism.
I mean, it's marketing. Sensationalism is their kind of marketing.
It seems like that's how they're getting the clicks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I guess I just don't know how to feel about that because I watch BBC and NPR and
Mm-hmm.
Yet I always go back to the main sources, our MSNBC.
Yeah.
Now we have to watch out for CNN, you know,
because
the guy that just bought it or runs it is a Trumper. Oh, I said it.
I'm throwing paper wad across the way here.
Ouch! Jeez, hey, that hurt.
What are you doing? I'm throwing Cheetos at you now.
Yeah.
I'm going to bring some.
So do you have any opinions on that, Heidi? Because you're in media and you're in marketing. And how are they, do they sit around a table and say, how can we get the most viewers? What story? Yeah. Is this how they do it?
Mm-hmm. And the headlines are written for clicks.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a big piece of it.
Well, and anybody that just reads headlines doesn't get anything because the headlines are often misleading.
Yeah.
To get you to click.
And then guess what happens? The retweets happen with someone just commenting based on an opinion formed reading the headline.
Right.
That's a dangerous place
to be.
It is
very dangerous.
So I think it's a bad idea. And part of how we get around that is having dialogue like we're having right now in person, humans hashing stuff out.
Yeah.
And even better is to bring someone contrarian, you know.
Well, yeah, if it's a reasonable person.
No qualifiers.
No, it has to be reasonable.
Okay, I guess.
No temper tantrums.
Well, no, we can't have that.
I get scared at temper tantrums.
It is interesting because we have now at our disposal every tool in the toolbox in terms of marketing.
Mm-hmm.
There are tools that track every single nuance, time spent on a page, how many clicks did we do, what are those keywords that people type in the most in Google.
Mm-hmm.
So I work at a digital agency once a week, and that is how we develop content, is we go in and we do an analysis of which things in Google are people searching for in this field. And so best places to dine in the Seattle area. Just that exact string of words in that phrasing now gets picked out, parceled, and plopped into whatever it is we're writing because we know people are searching in that exact way.
For those exact words.
Yes. And so we have an entire spreadsheet that'll just have, you know, things that we need to drop in that perform well in search on a given category.
Okay. So you're writing. So you figure out how to put that in, to put that phrase in your work.
I just jam it in there and
it's really
write around it. Yeah.
But, you know, I understand it too. That's how it's a modern way of looking at how we're going to do it from now on.
And the more that you type and the more text is published from a given site, the more natural search or natural SEO, search engine optimization.
Mm-hmm.
So your site gets higher ranks. The more content you publish.
Like
if you had a blog, lindaslife.com, lindaslife.blogspot.com.
You don't want to know.
Oh, but I do. I really, really do. But if you had that, the more frequently you publish and kind of the more quality, sort of journalism style, you still need to want to have that who, where, what, why, that triangle up top in your first paragraph. Mm-hmm. Everything else is just extra, but it feeds the spiders, the algorithms.
Well, no, I shouldn't say nobody, but most people don't read beyond a first paragraph
or two. That's right.
So
yeah, it all has to kind of get crammed up, which is why you're seeing those sensational headlines.
Yeah.
Because first you want their attention, then you want the click.
Mm-hmm.
So they do whatever they have to do.
And it doesn't matter after the click, whether you read it or not. It doesn't matter.
You got them. Because there's ads, like this page I want to illustrate to you. You know, we're already in the story, so they can tell their advertisers, you've been exposed to X number of readers or clicks. So it's money in the bank for our advertisers and their revenue stream.
Well, it's a good way to get advertisers.
That's true too, because
whether or not that translates to dollars, we don't know.
Yes and no.
Okay.
because there are monitors on these ads. So if they get clicked, then there's probably, you know, you can sign up on Instapages or email lists and everything's measured. So the minute if you touch that, even by accident, it counts and it costs somebody money. It's fascinating. And there's every single tool you can possibly imagine in the toolbox, like your phone. If you've got geo-targeting, you know, geolocator services, if you've got that activated, then you're getting geo-targeted for ads. You could be passing the Subway right there down the street and suddenly you're getting an ad for a discount on Subway sandwiches because you've told your phone it's okay to tell the world where you are, like what street you're on, and you'll get hit. Or, you know.
Do you have that?
I have mine blocked.
Yeah.
And it's lame because when I want to look at the ferry schedule, they also rely on that same technology. Mm-hmm. And so it defaults to Fauntleroy. So I always have to toggle back to Vashon.
Yeah.
Asked me, you hit a hot button, Linda.
Well, it's very interesting, I think. I love it.
Thank you.
I love the whole idea. I'm really stuck on, and I think we should devote at least part of a show to it.
Yeah.
Media.
Sure.
And marketing. I'm really upset about the news. I love news. I love current events and politics and history and all of it. And I'm having a problem with some of my favorite newscasters who are disappointing me in espousing their points of view over and over and over and over. I want the news.
I do too. I miss it. And yet, I don't know.
You know, I want to know what's going on in Congress. What are they doing today? Well, you can go to C-SPAN.
Yeah.
Which,
I know. Let me say, that ain't changed.
No, that has not changed.
Still a snooze fest.
They have tools, too, that they don't use.
They don't.
Yeah, they don't use
them. You know what would be so awesome is if they had some, like, crackpot rascal in the side panel. Like, they just, you know?
Yeah.
And just... There's a skit in Key and Peele where they have Obama speaking and then they have a street interpreter breaking it down in Ebonics.
Yeah.
My God.
Oh, I bet it's good.
I would love that for C-SPAN.
I know.
What just happened was beep, 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 you know, give me the profane version and break it down.
Yeah.
And also the impacts, because I feel like it's almost a deliberate fragmentation of news and distractions because that way... I'm going to sound like a conspiracy theorist now, but the system can churn and we can be distracted and not focused and not raise holy hell over the issues that are actually really important, that are rights that are being taken away from us or whatever.
Whatever it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do feel like it's a bit of a smokescreen and it's exhausting. It's just, you go to find news, Linda, and you can't find it. You're distracted by like the man who disemboweled and like took apart his girlfriend in a trailer because he had a meth addiction. There's all these stories. Like,
I know.
Where are these coming from?
I know. I used to check in. Do you know Raw Story? Do you know that website?
I've seen it.
Oh my
God. Yeah.
I do check into it every now and then because it is all sensationalist. All of it is sensationalist. But there occasionally are some real nuggets in there that the mainstream media isn't covering. But really, what they do is an amalgamation of everybody else's news.
Oh, yeah. Those aggregators. See, because they want the clicks.
They get the clicks that way. Yeah. And so you can get Washington Post and New York Times and HuffPost or whatever.
Yeah.
On that one
click. Oh, that's kind of tidy. It's
yeah,
nice.
But the stories that they choose are pretty sensationalist, you know?
Even on my work computer, there's this annoying box that comes up on the Lenovo and it's got... these news headlines, and you'll go to look for weather, and then it's still giving you all that other crazy trailer trash stuff. It's like, don't click on it, even though it sounds fascinating.
I really want to read this, but I'm not going to click.
I'm going to go down the rabbit hole, Linda. Oh.
And then you do.
I have. I totally admit it.
Yeah. Oh, I have.
And
too.
It hasn't been that long that I went down the rabbit
hole. You know, it's kind of fun, really, if you're on a, aside from, you know, snake handlers in Kansas and that kind of, you know, that kind of stuff.
It makes you feel normal. Because it's like, oh my God,
oh
I'm
my
so
God,
boring.
I'm shocked. I am shocked. I know.
But it also goes like, what the hell is the matter with people? And there's some really bad parents. When you read those headlines, that's my takeaway. There's some really bad parents in the world. And there's some really messed up men who have no business dating women.
No, that's right. And we can just sit here in our studio and say whatever we want.
Wah, 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 wah.
You know, we're running out of time already.
How about that?
I wanted to, what else do you have on your ticket?
I think we ticked.
Did we cover pretty
much? We
ticked
the boxes.
You know, one thing that we didn't tick was I found, in the beginning of the show, we were talking about partnership and, you know, compassion and that kind of stuff. I found an article in The Guardian.
Cool.
And the headline is Killed by Indifference. France shocked at death on busy Paris street.
Yes.
A Swiss photographer, famous photographer, old man, René Robert, died from hypothermia after falling and being ignored for 9 hours on a busy Paris street. He'd just come from dinner. He was having dinner at a posh restaurant and he fell down and nobody stopped.
That is
and he died.
Horrible.
He suffered a dizzy spell and then he laid there for 9 hours until, guess what? A homeless person called emergency. And hundreds of people had walked past him. You know, we hear about this. I've heard about, I mean, we'd say in New York City for sure, you know, that kind of stuff was, that's kind of old news. We hear it's dangerous streets and if you fall down, people will walk, you know, that kind of thing, but it's still happening. People are so indifferent to other people's suffering. And I just want to go back to what we said in the beginning about partnership and cooperation and trying to make the world a better place.
It's a good theme.
It is a good theme.
Compassion.
And one of the, friends of this man who died, of Mr. Robert, said he didn't freeze to death. He was killed by indifference.
It's not wrong to say that.
And he, you know, he said people often, he said, and I've done it too, look the other way when you see somebody in trouble. And it, you know, it was kind of a, I guess it was a nice restaurant in a sketchy neighborhood where he was.
I get it.
But thank God that a homeless guy decided he could help and then call 911. It was too late, but, you know.
Right. He could have been on the street a lot longer, too, but it's so sad. That happened, actually, outside of the Honolulu Advertiser newspaper where I worked.
It did?
There was a gentleman, but this was our lawn out front was where a lot of derelicts would pass out. And so it was so common for us to see people passed out on the front lawn. We would take our lunch breaks and we were union. And so we had only so much time to go and come back anyway.
Yeah.
It happened. We walked past, people passed out and one was actually dead. When we came back from lunch, they were putting him on a gurney and body bag, basically.
And away he went.
Yeah. Pretty sad.
Well, this article also said that there are 600 people annually homeless who die on Paris streets. 600.
600. Mm-hmm. And every one of them was someone's little baby.
I know.
That's the part. It's the worst.
And here we are in America, the land of plenty, right?
Mm-hmm.
We've been taught that for years and years.
We're taught.
And how many homeless we have. We don't have time to have a show today about the homeless, but I'd be really interested in learning more about Seattle's situation because it's worsening.
Oh, yeah.
More and more and more people are homeless.
It's
and it's not
scary.
Always drug related and it's not always mental health related. It's economic. It's
that
single moms.
That's going to be the theme this year for sure. So let's stay housed. Let's keep working.
Stay housed.
Keep
save
hustling.
Your money. Be nice.
Yeah.
It really doesn't hurt to be nice. My mom used to say that to me. I would say, I don't want to talk to her. And she would say, it won't hurt you to be nice.
That's a good one.
It is a good one. And it doesn't hurt to be nice, you know?
Show your love and your sympathy and your compassion.
Yeah.
I like it. And we've been that house that's let people live with us many times. And that's the only, I think that's the main thing that David and I are able to do as an expression of compassion is say, you can stay with us.
Yeah. Well, my son is doing that right now for a young woman who really was in a bad situation. And my son and his wife took her in and it's working out well.
That's
you know, there's
so
a few
great.
Wrinkles to work out and habits and things that,
God,
you know,
yes.
roommates are a different deal, but anyway, they're doing that. And I applaud them for that.
That's good.
Yeah. Makes mama proud.
More of this.
Yeah.
I like that. And you're going to make me want to go shake the shoulder of everybody that we pass by on the street
and
now.
And say hello.
Exactly.
Yeah. Heidi, what a fun show.
It's time.
Thank you.
You're really listening to the voice of Vashon at KVSH LP
101.9.
This has been The Clatch.
Bye-bye, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.